Right now, 10 above Racine and Kenosha, wind northwest at 10, wind chill is 13 below. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next.
And we welcome you to the Thursday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We're going to be spending most of today's program with Jennifer Charpentier, who is the executive director of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. And she has joined us before to talk about the great work of the Gateway Technical College Foundation, the difference that they make for the better in the lives of so many Gateway students. In many cases, helping pave the way for somebody to not only consider but apply and be accepted to Gateway and complete a degree here. And there are a couple of new ventures, new undertakings that are underway that we're going to be talking about, as well as just the bread and butter scholarships that they help make possible as the philanthropic partner of Gateway Technical College. And so it's great to have this opportunity to reconnect with Jennifer Charpentier and to hear more about what's new with the Gateway Technical College Foundation. We welcome you back to the program.
Thank you, Greg. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Yeah, and our listeners might be interested to know that once upon a time, your office was right down the hall.
Right. So now we walk across the parking lot.
Yeah, we don't get to cross paths quite so often anymore. You've been with the foundation for a few years. How many years?
Yeah, 12 years.
Wow.
Yeah, it's gone so fast. It's gone so fast, and it's such an honor to do the work that we do. You know, really, it's our donors and their investment in the community through the foundation that helps transform the lives of our students, and it is it's heartening and exciting to be a part of that process and really helping support students in a way that they can transform their own lives.
Right. And you get to really see the fruits of your labors in some very, very tangible ways, of course, which is great. And not everybody, a lot of people can do good work, but not necessarily have that sort of payoff be just crystal clear right in front of them. But you can look into the eyes of these students whose lives you've changed, and it's great.
Right, yes, agreed.
So first of all, for someone listening who is not at all familiar with the foundation, I mean, I'm guessing most of our listeners have at least have a passing acquaintance with the general concept, but tell our listeners a little more about specifically the Gateway Technical Foundation, what it is and why it exists.
Yeah, so Gateway Foundation was founded in 1977, and its purpose is really to help build relationships in the community, to offer, initially it was offering scholarships, that's still very true. It also is, because of us being a 501c3 organization, there are some organizations and individuals who prefer to give a charitable gift, and so they can give their gift through Gateway Foundation to help our students at the college or help the college. So we continue to accomplish those things. And also are regularly looking for how can we help students at pain points that they are challenged to continue their education, that they want, sometimes for our scholarship recipients, it's the first recognition they've ever had of their hard work and their commitment to changing their own life. And so there's lots of ways in which that we can be flexible and yet adhere to the standards of excellent criteria, good stewardship, important financial management of the funds that we receive, and making sure that we are helping our students to get to where they want to go.
You were saying that although Gateway Technical College is obviously right in the name, and the foundation exists to serve Gateway and its students, you are, at least in some respects, a separate entity.
Right.
Explain that distinction.
Yeah, so we are called, in jargon, we are called an institutionally related foundation.
Ah.
So that means we are a private 501c3 who partners with a public institution like Gateway Technical College. And so we have an independent board of directors who represent the community, and like any 501c3 organization, they are champions for our students and for the college and for the foundation. They provide oversight and have the duty of trusteeship and reviewing and representing the community and making sure that we're fulfilling our mission. So like any other 501c3 organization, we have those responsibilities and the opportunities to really serve the community. And yet we're also so tied to Gateway Technical College in terms of being focus of the mission, listening to what we understand students need from the college, and being able to take that what the college is seeing as interests, and being able to help close gaps through the generosity of our donors.
Hmm. Let's talk about the donors, because of course the good work of the foundation wouldn't be possible mm-hmm. without donors, probably a lot of them, and the funds that they donate to you. Tell us kind of the nature of that revenue stream. I mean,
sure.
Where does or from whom the money come, and how does it flow to you?
Yeah, so it comes to us usually through cash or through a check or an online gift. It can come from individuals or small businesses. Sometimes some of the largest employers in our area also are making gifts, either through outright gifts to our programs, to the mission of the foundation, or through our events. They are sponsoring events. And so we do have two fundraising events that we host. The first one is the Foundation Scramble. That's held in May. It is the last Thursday in May, so I believe that's May 22nd in 2025. So that's where our community members, business leaders, and community leaders golf with the goal of helping Gateway students. And that is available if people want to put together a foursome or just come golf themselves in support of our students. And registration is at gtc.edu/foundation. And so it's a great day of playing golf and then hearing a little bit more about the impact that playing that day of golf and the investment that they're making with their time and having fun makes a difference in the lives of our students.
That's great.
So, and that event has been around for more than 30 years.
Mm.
So the second event that we have is called Ignite the Future. And that will be in October. And I believe it's October 30th, so people can mark their calendars now. And so it's a couple-hour event that we hold on the Kenosha campus in Madrigal Haribo Center, and Haribo Hall, I should say. And and that is networking and learning more about the college, a silent auction, and also an inspiring speaker who will provide information to us about thinking about the future and how are we igniting the future.
Wonderful, wonderful. And of course, every gift that is made is tax deductible, which of course matters
right.
to a lot of people.
It is. So, yeah, and so there's a variety of ways that individuals can make gifts. We do get stock gifts as well, so it can certainly help somebody if they want to make a gift of stock.
Sure. And once you get the money, explain where that money goes. I don't mean where it's dispersed ultimately in terms of to students, but when you receive money, what do you do with the money in the meantime?
Right. So we are stewarding the gift, so we make sure that we properly thank our donor, and we also want to make sure that they're staying up to date with what's going on at the foundation. And then depending on where the donor has told us they want their funds to be used, then we will apply those funds towards our programs or to the mission of the foundation. So those programs can include our scholarships, a variety of kinds of scholarships that we have. Then we also have the student emergency funds, which we can talk a little bit more about. And there's a couple of other new programs that we're getting started right now. And then sometimes we will also receive gifts that are for specific projects at the college.
Hmm.
So
very good.
Yeah.
For those of you just joining us in this portion of the morning show, I'm speaking with Jennifer Charpentier, who is executive director of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. And the heart and soul of what they do is an array of scholarships and And maybe before we start talking about some of the new things, let's just talk about, in a sense, the most basic kind of scholarships that the foundation offers.
Yeah. So the foundation offers scholarships to students. The first one that we're probably best known for are scholarships where students apply online. They apply once, and then based on what they tell us about themselves, they get matched the criteria of the scholarships.
Ah.
The criteria is actually, the bulk of those scholarships are named in that someone, a donor, an individual, a corporation, an organization, community group has decided they want to invest in Gateway students. And so through a conversation with me, I listen to what they are interested in funding and what type of student they'd like to help. So for example, they could decide they want to help somebody who specifically lives in one of our counties. Mm. It could be someone who is in a particular program. It could be someone they want to invest in early childhood. It could be that they want to invest in criminal justice. It could be that they want to help a student who's in horticulture. So there's a wide variety, manufacturing, engineering, any of the 70 programs that Gateway Technical College has.
Right.
We can talk through what kind of trajectory, what kind of program they want to help a student in. And then based on that is what the scholarship then is dispersed to a student who meets the criteria of the scholarship itself.
And I assume you mean by named that someone could donate to a scholarship that is named after themselves, and I suspect in many cases it might actually be named after a loved one who's passed away as a point of legacy.
Yes, it absolutely is. So sometimes there are a number of scholarships that have been established in memory of someone in the community or someone who has been connected to Gateway Technical College. So, for example, we have a criminal justice scholarship that was named. It's the Joseph Myers IV scholarship that was named in honor of a student who had been in the criminal justice program and sadly passed away way too early. And so his family and friends started the scholarship in memory of Joey.
Wow.
So, so that's just one example. Sometimes people will honor someone who's still with us. So, for example, Diane Skewies was a nursing instructor and a dean here at the college for many years, and her family and friends got together and created a scholarship in her honor on the eve of her retirement.
Wow, what a great idea.
Yeah, so there's just lots of different ways to help honor someone in the community or a business. The last one I want to share is one that's called Sister Angelica Summer Scholarship. It was named in honor of a longtime care provider, nurse, spiritual leader at the St. Monica's care facility.
Yes, I'm well acquainted with it.
Living St. Monica's Living. Hope we'll get that right.
Right.
Please edit that.
Sure. Right.
And Sister Angelica has been. It was started in honor of her 45th year of service.
Wow.
And she's a Gateway alum.
Oh, that's
so
great.
So it's really they decided to honor her that way, and this last month I was able to visit their board meeting, and bring at least one student with me. And so the student got to meet Sister Angelica. Sister Angelica got to meet the student, and she is genuinely touched by this continued honoring of her and helping Gateway students. And the student who I brought with me, the recipient, was just so moved to meet her. So it's just one of the wonderful things that can happen when people choose to invest in a student that way.
That's wonderful. I'm well acquainted with St. Monica's because I have a relative who lives there, and I have seen Sister Angelica myself, although I've not had the pleasure of directly meeting her, but I am deeply touched myself to hear this particular story. Are we talking about dozens of scholarships or maybe even hundreds? I mean,
We have about 175 scholarships.
Wow.
That are specifically named.
And you have the responsibility in terms of taking care of those and properly and thoughtfully dispersing those funds to deserving individuals.
It is a combined effort, mm-hmm. From both on the side of the staff and also our wonderful volunteers. So whether it's board members or board committee members, or we even have scholarship application readers who are part of this process of making sure that we are awarding the scholarship to a student who meets the criteria and who is a great candidate to be a scholarship recipient. So there's many hands involved. I may be the executive director of the organization, but it takes many people to be involved in that process.
Right.
And then also here at the college, it's critical and it's amazing the support that our students get in terms of from the faculty and staff, making sure that students know about scholarships, encouraging students to write scholarship to submit an application, writing letters of recommendation. There also can be the first group of people who are letting a student who is facing challenges know about resources through the foundation. So it's that partnership that we have and that relationship we have with faculty and staff. We really can't accomplish what we need to accomplish without everyone's involvement.
Right, and that really helps facilitate these connections that are so important.
Yeah.
We're speaking with Jennifer Charpentier in this portion of the morning show. She is executive director of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. In addition to these kind of bread and butter scholarships that have been the kind of the central part of the foundation for such a long time, there are some relatively new additions to what you do, and that's a reflection of some of the new ways in which Gateway serves to seeks to serve students here in southeastern mm-hmm. Wisconsin. And of course, one thing that has changed a lot over the recent years is the way in which Gateway is a part of many high school students'
mm-hmm.
lives. And
mm-hmm.
towards that end, there are some special scholarships that are really geared in that direction. Tell our listeners about that.
Yeah, thank you. So the first group of scholarships that are part of that traditional bread and butter, as you put it, are our high school scholarships that students apply online. And then based on what they tell us about themselves, they get matched to the criteria of our scholarships.
Hmm.
So there are there's a scholarship application open right now that is for high school students who planned to direct enroll from their teenage-based high school to Gateway after they have completed and graduated. So that application is, again, online, and it's completely electronic, so a student completes the application. We do strongly encourage at least one letter of recommendation, and the student really should talk with the person or people they would like to serve as references and get their email address. It's also important for them to do it before they put the email address in, because the reference will get an email. So, and that email provides them with a link to fill out a short form on the scholarship application itself, so that when we go to review the application, everything is all in one location.
Hmm.
So, so there's, this last year we were able to help 59 students.
Wow.
Which is amazing. We had 19 high schools represented out of that. We have 35 in the district, so there's still some opportunity out there. The total amount that we awarded was close to $95,000.
Wow.
So that is really through an extraordinary gift that we received through the Kenosha Community Foundation. That's really what helped bump it up significantly.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing about the high school scholarships is that if a student is thinking they're going to come, then they definitely should apply. They do need a C average to apply, but there is at least one scholarship awarded per high school in the district, and that's through the President's Opportunity Scholarship. So for sure your odds could be really good at getting at least one scholarship. We do have other scholarships that are specific either to the community the student resides in, what school they go to, or what program they're headed to.
Very good. Now I think related to that, but I think something different, is something related to Gateway's High School Academy.
Yes, yes.
So tell us about that.
So the high school academies, there is a, if students complete all four classes as part of that, their academy, and they graduate, you know, they complete their academy, then they are can if they come directly to Gateway, they can get a $1,000 scholarship to get started at as a student post high school. So and that scholarship is $1,000, and so if anyone's interested in helping that be a reality, please, you know, reach out to me at the foundation or go to gtc.edu/foundation. You'll see, you can click on the button that says donate now and you can help make that scholarship a reality.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
One of the new undertakings that you mentioned before we went on the air that intrigued me so much is a special a pilot program that you just completed. Speaking of completed, it's a completion grant, and it sounds like it is something designed to help students, certain students, sort of reach the finish line.
Yes.
So explain kind of what the concern is about that,
right,
and then how something like a completion grant could really make a difference for the better.
Yeah. So this grant program, the students were selected really based on how many credits they were to graduation, and how close they are. They need to be a successful student with a C average or greater. And then it's also combined with what do they owe the college in terms of any debt. So what the completion grant allows them to do is to finish their last classes and know that they are done. So it will, one of the things that we found was that there was a high percentage of the students, not all of them, but many of them, who completed and graduated. So this is a wonderful way to get them, it's almost a graduation gift. You know, that it's a wonderful investment in the students to say, we want to help you get done, get properly launched into your next career, and not have the financial burden that weighs on so many of our students have it be lifted so that you can finish and complete.
Right.
Yeah.
Towards that end, but on the other end of the Gateway experience, if you will, it sounds like you are working to create something that could be helpful to students right at the outset.
Yeah.
And as they are part of that admissions process.
Right.
In certain cases where they are called upon to do some tests that would be out of pocket, that could really be a barrier for certain students. What are we talking about here?
Right. So one of the things that we've found is that through the beginning of the admission process in particular programs, so for example, health programs, criminal justice, early childhood, those programs understandably want to make sure that a student can be in that career. So to be in that career, they may need to pass a criminal background check. They may need to have fingerprinting done. They may need to have some medical tests. But they need to have some medical tests done to make sure that they can either get started in their program or to actually get started, in the case of nursing, get started in their clinicals. So and that can be between $100 and $175 that a student may or may not have money for. So we have, through the generosity of the ProMega Corporation that created an endowed fund a number of years ago for students in healthcare, we have been able to use some of that funding, the income from that funding, to help students with their background checks or around their medical testing so that they can get started in health programs. We run through the money very quickly because it really does help students get started, and there's a great need.
Yeah.
So when we think about students getting started and dreaming of becoming a nurse, becoming a medical assistant, dream of something in healthcare, or they're dreaming of working with small children, and Gateway is a part of that pathway they're planning on, and then to not have money to be able to even get started because of those pieces, that's what we're looking to do. So we know from the pilot that we've done and the funding we have, very small amount of money, but we've been able to help some students, that we think this will be successful. So we're in the process of finishing kind of setting up the program and securing resources or the money for the program.
Wow, what a great idea. And it's exactly the kind of thing that, you know, for a lot of us, it would never even occur to us that this is a need. So great. I know that a couple other things that the foundation makes possible. First of all, something that you just refer to as emergency funds, but that in some cases can make it a huge difference for a certain Gateway student that might be in a particularly difficult situation.
Right.
Typically, what are the kind of things that would trigger this possibility?
Sure. So there, one of the things I think is important for people to understand is so many of our students are seeking to better their own lives. And part of that means that they are seeking to get into a family-supporting career or to improve their job skills. And so often they don't have a lot of financial capacity. And that also means they may be living from paycheck to paycheck and barely making it. And so then if your car breaks down, you're in a car accident, you, a family member, your partner, your roommate loses their job, and you have to help, you need to get rent paid for, that the student might have to stop out of a class or stop out of their program because they don't have the resources to get the car repaired, to make sure that rent payment comes through so they can stay sheltered.
Right.
And so those are two examples of things that can happen is someone's lost a job, there's been a significant change in the landscape for them that was not something they would have anticipated. And so that's some of what we can help close the gap on. We can help close gaps on rent, on car repair, on, we also will do, sometimes someone might need a little assistance with childcare because their previous childcare provider, there's an issue that arose. There could be a, you know, often it's some sort of loss that's happened that we're trying to help them close the gap on. So utilities, transportation, sometimes it's for its tuition fees and books that they can't come up with the money for in that semester. So those are the big pieces.
Right.
Sometimes it's food that we'll help them with because they're trying to juggle everything. So we're just really trying to help them provide, just be able to stay in school.
Right.
And
right.
Really, many of our students are so grateful for whatever assistance they're getting. And I still remember a thank you note we had from a student who said, "I didn't know other people cared about people like me."
Wow.
And I thought, oh my goodness. So even, you know, you think about as a Gateway Foundation donor to help our students, you know, a lot of what you're demonstrating is you care about people in the community.
It's as simple as that.
Yeah.
What it's all about.
Yeah, so that's the Student Emergency Funds. What's exciting about the funds is that we did find out that students who received emergency grants were 44% more likely to graduate in their third year.
Wow. So you are really accomplishing the purpose, which is not only to make people's lives better, but to help ensure that they're going to be able to finish what they began.
Right.
That's
great. Yeah.
Is this thing called Food for Thought related to that, or is that a different program?
So the Food for Thought program was started a number of years ago through the Generosity of the Class Fund grant. And it is one where it had many iterations to try to help make sure that we're meeting students' needs. And this one is now, we provide a couple different ways that we provide assistance. One is through a $50 gift card to a grocery store. So the intention is to help a family with a student with very short-term food insecurity.
Yeah.
There is also the Connection Centers on the Kenosha and Racine campuses now, and I understand we're getting ready to do open one in Elkhorn next year, but Racine will open next. And those Connection Centers are made possible. There was an investment from the CLOS Fund, again, to help with some of the equipment needs. But student activity fee is helping with that as well. And then there's a partner, we work with the college works with food providers that were able to purchase food on a per pound basis to help stock the shelves so that we become a food shelf for our students.
Wow.
So, yeah, it's really quite amazing. The really cool thing, too, about the Connection Centers is not only is there, you know, the food shelf there, there's also G Boutique, which provides professional clothing for students who might need it for their first interview, their first day out of the job, you know. And then there's also in that area or adjacent to it is a space for the college's four-year partners to come meet with students in terms of universities. It's also a place for social services to come be in that space to meet with students who, instead of the student having to go to all of the different resources in the community, you know, taking a bus from a location to location, instead the service is right here.
Wow.
And so, you know, you think about the amount of time that it's saving and resources and energy that it's saving our student so that they can focus really on being a student.
Yeah.
In addition to their, you know, whatever care responsibilities they have, and if they have a full-time job or a part-time job. So really, it's an amazing resource that's growing on the campuses. And gifts to the Food for Thought program can help fund, helps those gift cards. But you can also make gifts to the Connection Center to help that resource. But the other thing about the Food for Thought program is that the college is also working with our culinary arts program on the Racine campus a student hasn't had a meal that day, and if they want a meal that, you know, they need to eat, that they can get it up to a $10 voucher at the on the cafe line. Now, it's only for our students who are currently registered, and students can there's a limited number of times they can access it. It wouldn't be many days in a row. It would likely be that they might have it a couple times, and there'll be a ceiling on how many times somebody could potentially use it. But we do want students, of course, it's important for students, as we know from kids and adults of all ages, if you're hungry, it makes it more difficult to learn.
Absolutely. So, you've really thought about all kinds of different facets of the student's life and the student's experience, and the foundation is there to try to make a difference for the better in so many different respects. Mm-hmm. That's so laudable. So for people listening to this and finding this inspiring, I mean, first of all, of course, we're glad to get the word out for those who might really benefit from accessing some of these resources. But on the other end, for somebody listening who finds themselves inspired by the mission of the foundation, how can they best act on that? I mean, in terms of supporting what you're doing and being a part of it.
Sure. If you have questions or would like to learn more in detail about any of the programs I mentioned today, I'd be happy to talk to you on the phone. My telephone number is 262-564-2866. You're also welcome to email me at charpentier@gtc.edu. I'd be glad to visit with you, to talk to you on the phone or respond to an email and understand more of what you'd like to accomplish or what you hope to do, or you just want to learn more about a particular program. Of course, if you know exactly what you want to do, you can of course make a gift online at gtc.edu/foundation and click donate now. For people who are contemplating making a legacy gift, of course you can just click on the link that talks about making a legacy gift, either through a will, a trust, or other kinds of vehicles from estates. You also are welcome to write a check and send it to Gateway Foundation at 3520 30th Avenue. Kenosha, Wisconsin, and 53144. Let us know what you want it to go towards. If you could put a note in the memo line, that would be helpful. Of course, we'd love to have your telephone number so I can call and thank you when we receive it.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Well, this is a lot of information, important information, and gratifying information in terms of hearing about the good work of the Gateway Technical College Foundation. And at the helm, Jennifer Charpentier. great to connect with you, and thank you for all the good work that you're doing on behalf of the foundation, and for all of the good that you and your colleagues are making in the lives of all kinds of people. And thanks for being part of the morning show today.
My pleasure, and thank you to all of our donors.
You're listening to the Thursday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. Part two of today's program features an interview from the Morning Show archives, recorded and initially broadcast back in 2005. Certainly one of the best known and most admired teachers in the entire country has to be Ron Clark. He was designated the 2001 Disney Teacher of the Year and has been a very visible presence ever since, a superbly gifted teacher who has a couple of books to his credit, one of them called The Essential 55, which outlines a number of different rules which he likes to follow in the classroom, the 55 important rules for his students to think about in order for them to have the most meaningful experience possible. And now he has written a great book called The Excellent 11, Qualities Teachers and Parents Use to Motivate, Inspire, and Educate Children. It's published by Hyperion. And Ron Clark joins us for a few minutes to talk about his life as a teacher and the experience of writing this book. Ron Clark, we welcome you to the morning show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I should think that it is no small matter to sit down and try to write a book about something which is, first of all, so important to you and something which is a very complicated sort of thing to unravel. How much did you learn about teaching and why you teach the way you do and how you teach the way you do? How much of that sort of came to you, did you come to understand, just in the process of trying to write about it in these two books?
You know, writing is an amazing thing. You know, getting your thoughts on paper and actually seeing it, you know, there in print, you know, it's totally different than just living it or just thinking your ideas. And it was very therapeutic for me. It allowed me to go through all of my ideas and kind of get things into a structure, and it was really nice to see how everything came together. But it was wonderful, and it was also nice that after I wrote The Essential 55, I traveled across the country. I went to 49 states talking to teachers and parents about what's really working in education in America, and I had so many great ideas and so many wonderful things I saw that these people were doing, and I just kept taking notes about things I saw that really worked. And it was nice to actually take the time and to put all of those ideas and all those creative strategies I saw into a book, and that's what The Excellent 11 became.
Mm. I want to ask you about a couple of those 11 essentials. The very first one, which is so evident to, for anyone who sees you or meets you, is enthusiasm. But one of the things you say is that enthusiasm is best when it serves a purpose, that just unbridled enthusiasm is not enough really to carry the day or to get the job done.
Right, exactly. I see some first-year teachers just spinning their wheels. They're so excited, and they're trying to motivate these kids, and they're doing these games and different things, and the kids are excited, but they're not really learning. And so I really try in my classroom to pull in education and really to make the core of what we're doing deal with the standard course of study and what these kids are required to know on their intergrade tests. You know, I'm really always standard-driven, making sure that, yes, there's a lot of enthusiasm, I'm excited, sometimes I'll jump on my desk, whatever it takes to get these kids motivated, but I make sure that we're always focused on the curriculum and that there is a purpose in what these kids are learning. And I just beg my parents, I say, please, you know, when you're dealing with your kids, please have a positive outlook about education. You need to be enthusiastic as well about learning, because kids are so impressionable, whether they're 5 years old or whether they're 18 years old, and they look to their parents. And if their parents are enthusiastic about learning and enthusiastic about school and looking forward to the school year, then the kids will be as well.
Hmm. You also, in kind of taking things full circle, when you get to your 11th essential, which is resilience, you hearken back to the whole issue of enthusiasm, and you remind us that over-enthusiasm is one of the things which can lead to burnout, which, of course, is an increasingly common phenomenon among teachers.
Right, and especially, you know, first-year teachers, I see these teachers in our school systems, and it's typical. It happens in every school where you go. The first-year teachers come in, and they're put on every committee. They're asked to be the coaches. They're asked to serve lunch duty. They're asked to do bus duty, and these teachers say yes. They're first-year teachers. They're excited. They have so much energy and enthusiasm. They want to do all of it. Then after 3 or 4 years, they burn out, and they leave the profession, and we're seeing that happen in schools all across America, that after 3 or 4 years, these exceptional teachers are leaving because because they burn out. And so it's important that we have a balance in education. I tell teachers, you know, in order to teach about life, you have to have a life. You have to be willing to take some time for yourself. And I remember sometimes I would have a ton of papers to grade. My friends would say, let's go play tennis. And I'd say, you know what, I'm going to go play tennis. And I'd go play tennis, and the next morning I'd wake up, and I'd be rejuvenated, and I'd go in that classroom, and I'd say, you know what, kids, I looked through these. I didn't grade them. Let's go over them together. I mean, you don't have to feel like you have to grade everything. You don't have to feel like you have to be on every committee to coach everything. And it's okay to say no to the principal sometimes. And, you know, sometimes we just need to close our classroom doors, look at those kids, and focus on them. That's where we're going to get rejuvenated, not trying to serve on every committee or do all the bus duties or do everything that the principal asks. Sometimes it's necessary to say no, because if you don't, you're going to burn out.
You're touching on something which is, I think, essential number four, which is reflection. You say one of the best qualities of an exceptional teacher is that he or she learns something from every lesson that is taught, and it takes a moment of reflection, of course, to be able to really achieve that. I suppose for many teachers, it's likely that they get into a cycle, a frantic kind of cycle, which doesn't leave a lot of time for reflection unless you really make a point of including it in your life.
Right. No, it all leads back to organization. I keep this binder. Every lesson I do, I devote one sheet of paper in the binder to that lesson, one sheet of paper for every day during that school year. And then after I'm teaching my lessons, after I'm doing different things, I go over and I make notes. I jot down notes of things that worked, things that didn't work, and it helps me. Lots of teachers do this. They keep worksheets at work. They keep information. They keep all different types of little notes for themselves. And so the next year, they can go through that binder, remind themselves, they can reflect on what worked. It'll make them be a better teacher. And everyone knows, you know, if you teach high school history and you teach five periods a day, that fifth period, those kids are lucky. They're going to get the best lesson. You know, the first period, you're learning about that lesson. The second period, you're getting into it. By the fifth period, you know, you've really learned how to master that lesson. You're doing it the best, you know. And if we just will take the time to reflect on what we've done, you know, we'll become better teachers. And also, reflection is important for kids. I love how I see first grade teachers. They'll give little kids on the first day of school, they'll say, all right, first graders, I want you to write one sentence on this sheet of paper. And some of them can, some of them can't, some of them really struggle. Then they'll take up those pieces of paper. Then on the last day of school, they'll give out another sheet of paper. They'll say, now you write a sentence. And then they'll write this beautiful sentence, all of them. Then she'll staple the pieces of paper together and pass them out. And she'll say, look how much you learned this year. I mean, it's wonderful for teachers to reflect and parents to reflect, but also for kids to reflect and say, oh, look how much I learned. You know, that will instill pride in these kids and make them feel good about themselves and encourage them to want to learn more in the future.
I love the story you told about your own sixth grade teacher, Mrs. Walker, who had every student in the classroom keep a daily diary of what occurred there. And those diaries stayed in the room until the last day of school when you were allowed to take them home. And you said you walked out of there feeling like you were holding $1 million. That was such a powerful tool of learning for you.
Yeah. During sixth grade, Miss Walker, she almost drove me crazy because every day, you know, no matter what happened, we were going to write in that journal for 5 minutes that day. And some days I didn't want to write in it. I didn't think I had anything to write. But she always encouraged us to write about our emotions, our feelings, what was going on. And on that last day when she gave it to us, you know, all those ideas were in there, and I just cherished it so much at that moment, but I had no idea. Now it's one of my most prized possessions in the world because I don't remember much from my fourth or fifth grade year. I remember some things from seventh grade, but my sixth grade year, it's just vividly clear. I can remember where I sat, my friends, on the lessons that we taught, how we changed classes. I can remember racing Hallett Moore and almost beating him in the sixth grade race. I mean, all these things I can remember because she took the time to say, we're going to reflect on this year and you're going to learn about what life is like in the eyes of an 11-year-old. And now I can look back and see how I felt at that age, and it's just a wonderful thing.
In the chapter devoted to adventure, trying to foster a sense of adventure in the classroom, I think you really do teachers a great service by talking about realistic adventure. That I suppose, particularly in this day and age, one really has to temper what might be the limits of your imagination on what sorts of adventures to take your classroom on, be it vicarious adventures or whatever, but that one has to have this sense of what is realistic, what is workable, what is going to ultimately achieve something meaningful for these young people.
Right. The first step with adventure is that I always tell my kids, you know, don't sit on your dreams. If there's something that you want to do, go for it. I want them to have courage. I want them to have determination to do these things, and I try and set an example for them. And also with adventure in the classroom, I try to do things to spice up that year. You know, especially if you're dealing with junior high students, you know, you can't just present the information to them. They're not going to get it. They need it to be exciting. They need it to be spiced up. They need something to really catch their attention and to be different. And doing adventure and pulling in, whether it's a scavenger hunt or something unusual or something where if you can manage to take them on a field trip where they're learning on that field trip, whatever you're doing, it's important to make things a little bit spicy, to make things a little different, and to add adventure into that classroom. And to my parents and my students, I say, listen, if you're dealing with a 13-year-old kid, and if you're having troubles with that kid, and you can't, if you don't have a good relationship or you can't relate to each other, then the best way to pull yourself together is to do something dealing with an adventure. When we're challenged at the same time, it bonds us. Like, for example, if you could take your 13-year-old to a local rock climbing wall, I know some parents are like, there ain't no way in the world I'm going up a rock climbing wall. But if you can do it, if you could push yourself a little bit, challenge yourself and challenge your 13-year-old and do it together, when you're done, you're going to feel like, yes, we did it. It's going to bond you together. Go to a local amusement park and ride a roller coaster together. Go camping. I know some of these things might be difficult and they take some time, but if you can do them, you're really going to do a lot to foster a good relationship with your 13-year-old or your child, no matter what age they are.
I was a bit surprised when you said the number one thing parents and teachers can do to positively affect the lives of our children and students is to become more aware of the way we speak to them.
That's it. Words are so powerful, and I see so many teachers and parents telling kids, you know, you're always talking, you're so disrespectful, you're so rude, your room's always a mess, you're doing this, you're the worst class I've seen, and kids are impressionable. They look to us to see who they are. They see themselves in our eyes. Whether they're 18-year-olds or 5-year-olds, they respect us whether or not we believe it, and they look to us to see who they are. And when we look at them, we've got to make sure we're speaking to them in a manner that points out their positive qualities, the things that they're doing well, and shows them their potential. Words are powerful.
In our last minute, I want to find out from you this great adventure which you have been on since been giving this great award. Has it been something of a disruption in your own teaching career? I mean, are you able still to be in the classroom as a teacher, or if not at the moment, do you look forward to the day when life will calm down and you can do what you've always done?
Right. I'm not a conventional teacher right now. I am still teaching, but I'm not in the classroom. I'm traveling with kids all around the world, going to Japan, taking kids from Harlem. We just got back from South Africa. And so we're traveling all around the world. I'm taking kids from disadvantaged areas and doing these things and teaching them through that way. And I'm traveling across the country, talking to teachers and parents. And so I'm not a regular classroom teacher right now, and I won't be until next year, next fall. But I'm just really enjoying this time. But I miss the classroom. That's my passion. That's where my heart is. And so I'm really looking forward to getting back in there. But we started something really neat. It's this website called www.ronclark.info, I-N-F-O. And it's a place where teachers can go or parents, and you can type in questions. And all these different teachers and parents across America will give you advice and tips, and you can ask me questions, and it's been wonderful. So that's taken up so much of my time and the traveling and promoting the books and things like that. It's just been really busy, but I'm looking forward to getting back into the classroom next fall. I can't wait.
And I'm sure the classroom is eager to have you back. The book, again, is The Excellent 11. It's author Ron Clark. Ron Clark, I thank you for joining us and for all of your good work which you have done on behalf of teachers everywhere.
No, thank you so much.
The preceding interview was recorded and initially broadcast 20 years ago, back in 2005. The next year saw the release of a made-for-TV movie titled The Ron Clark Story, starring Matthew Perry. That film can be viewed on YouTube. The year after that, in 2007, Ron Clark founded the Ron Clark Academy in Atlanta, Georgia, a nonprofit middle school that is still in operation. And Ron Clark's book, The Excellent 11, was re-released in a revised and updated edition in 2023. Tomorrow on The Morning Show, we will be previewing the next production at the Racine Theater Guild, which is a play called And In This Corner, Cassius Clay, a play about one of history's finest boxers. Our weather forecast is for mostly sunny skies today, quite cold, With a high temperature of 23 degrees, our winds out of the north 10 to 15 miles an hour. Partly cloudy overnight with a low of 5 above. Tomorrow's Friday should be sunny with a high of 26. Saturday sunny and 29. By Sunday, with partly sunny skies, we should see a high in the mid-30s, and we'll actually be into the mid-40s for a high by Monday and Tuesday. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.